good morning. Yeah, welcome to the virtual to the Zoom virtual meeting. Today we are having a briefing by National Treasurer on COVID-19 expenditure and the 2021 third quarter request for contract deviations and expansions by national departments and SO and SOEs. That's the reason why we're meeting today. We do have an agenda in front of us, our members. Darren, do you have any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. We received apologies from Mr. Kwankwa. Mr. Saropen indicated that he needs to leave the meeting at 10 o'clock. And then there's apology from the Director General for National Treasury. That's it, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, all members. Then we are going to proceed on the basis of this agenda, not unless there is a matter that you'd like to include.
Chair.
Honorable Nhlanhla.
Where is the DG of National Treasury? What is the apology? Because if we can get what is the reasons why it's not here, perhaps we would understand.
Yeah. Darren, what was the reason given?
The reason given is they are all busy finalizing the 2021 budget to be tabled next week.
Okay. Robin Tamini?
Chair, like I'm so reluctant to accept this apology because, I mean, it's not the first budget that the DG would be busy with. And also, secondly, I mean, this is a visual platform. It's not like you are flying to Cape Town to attend the meeting. So visually, one can really plan the meetings much more progressively than to not attend, because we are really sitting with a crisis and it's important items on the agenda, and we all really would have loved he's as the political head of the department to be here, but really I'm reluctantly accepting this apology, Chair.
I think Honorable Nhlanhla, let's write to the DG and express what we are saying and say that the committee would definitely would like to him to attend this meeting, especially I was looking at today's agenda. It's a very, very important agenda. Obviously, we know there will be apologies sometimes, but yesterday the DG was not in, and today, and as Robin Nhlanhla is saying, it's not an emergency. The budget is known and this is a virtual meeting. I think let's try to get that back to the DG. Darren?
Yes, Chairperson. Got it.
Okay, thank you. Right, let's see. Let's hear from the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, who's leading the team today.
Chairperson, it is Estelle Sitan from I'm the Acting Chief Procurement Officer at the National Treasury, and I'll be leading the presentations. And with me, I have some of my colleagues who will be assisting with answering some of the questions that may be posed after the presentation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sitan. How much time do you need?
Chairperson, I think we would be okay with less than an hour or even less, about 30 minutes for the presentation.
Okay, let's do that. Let's give you 30 to 45 minutes for all the presentations, and after that we'll start engaging. Can you live with that?
Yes, thank you, Chair. And thank you, honorable members, and good morning. Let me just share my screen. Thank you very much, and good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members and colleagues and all protocols observed. This morning, the OCPO will be presenting to the Standing Committee the quarter three deviations and expansion, as well as the COVID expenditure based on information that is received. Remedies, if we have time to do that. So the legislative basis for these deviations and expansions, it comes from Treasury Regulation 16A 6.4, which states that if in a specific case it is impractical to invite competitive bids, accounting officers or accounting authorities may procure goods and services that is required by other means and provide the reasons for such deviations. In to the value of about 68.7 billion. And the largest contributor of the 68.7 billion was for the renegotiation of coal to the power stations. This application was, however, not supported, and the reasons can be found in the actual response to Eskom. So you will see also in the number of deviations, it wasn't as significant as we would have thought, but it did increase from quarter one to quarter three in terms of numbers. So in quarter three, we had a total of 231 applications to the value of about 10 billion. And the 10 billion does not mean that all of them were supported. This is just the statistics on the number and the total value. In terms of the applications, Chairperson, we are concentrating on the top 20 applications or the top 20 applicants in terms of the value of their deviations. The top 20 contribute to over 95% of the value, which I will also show in a later slide. In this case, in quarter three, the highest contributor is Department of Health. This was for the procurement of vaccines through the COVID-19 Vaccine Global Access Facility, the COVAX facility, which is was for the value of 4.2 billion, which we did support. As the second largest contributor is PRASA. And that was about 1.1 billion was for the technical assistance to PRASA for the condition assessment, rehabilitation and maintenance of the network, as well as 902 million for National Private Security Services. The compensation fund is the third largest, and this was mainly attributed to the leasing of office accommodation. The chairperson, I just showed you the in terms of value. This is in terms
Which is the third one? I didn't get that third one.
Compensation fund.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. So in terms of the number of applications, you will see that although the Department of Health was the largest in terms of value, the Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries is the highest in terms of the number of applications that we receive, followed by the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, and then Eskom and the Unemployment Fund. So, Chair, in terms of the 9 billion of the top 20 applicants, you will see that in terms of value, 84% was conditionally supported. An additional 11 or 166 million was supported, 969 million not supported, and the rest was either within the accounting officer's mandate for noting, and the others were noting for sole and emergency procurement that we just noted. In terms of the number, 21 was not supported, 33 conditionally supported, 21 was for noting, 11 was supported, and the balance was either closed or within the accounting officer's mandate. So, Chairperson, the table that you see in front of you is basically just the table format of the graphs that was presented. And you will note again that the top 20 applicants, in terms of their value, in all the cases present more than 95%. Applications was received, and 89 of them makes up 95% of the value. I'm going to follow a similar process with contract modifications, where again you will see that in terms of the quarter to quarter movement, the quarter one to quarter two was quite significant in terms of value. And in this case, it is attributed to about 21 applications from Eskom to the value of 29.1 billion. And the largest of this 29 billion was 13.4 billion for the turbine expansion of a contract for the turbine generator at the Medupi power station. All of this information is available in the power, in the Excel spreadsheets that was provided, and the actual letters of response and applications that we've received. In terms of the number of expansions, quite a large number in the first quarter, which then dipped in the second quarter and again picked up in the third quarter. And the main reasons, or the main reason for this, honorable members, is basically that during the second quarter, there was probably quite a lot of tenders that could not be finalized due to COVID, and therefore quite a lot of departments had to ask for either deviations or expansions of contracts or modifications on contracts. In terms of the value of the modifications that we've received, you will note again that Eskom is the largest contributor. As in the previous slide, the 1.98 billion that it contributed to the modifications was for 21 different applications, and the largest of the 1.98 billion was a 551 million application for expansion the power, was for the supply and delivery of coal to Kusile Power Station to the value of about 309 million. Chairperson, then again, in terms of the numbers, you will see in quarter three, Eskom was the largest contributor in terms of the numbers, followed by the revenue services and by the ETDP CETA. Contracts not comply to the tender processes or could not supply the service. Then there's value for money reasons. Quite a lot of extensions on accommodation leases. The continuation of using of existing software or software licenses. In exceeding the 15%, 15 million threshold or 20%, 20 million threshold expansions. This is very prevalent with our SOCs due to the nature of their projects. If you think about Eskom and Transnet, their projects are in the billions of rands. So all modifications and deviations will fall within this threshold, and therefore we see the large number of deviations and expansions coming from our SOCs. Quite a few is also from government to government procurement, and especially with GTEC and the CSIR. And then lastly, expansion of scope, either time and material or one of them. Chairperson, then also some trends that we observed during the last quarter or even this last three quarters, that there is an increased number, however slightly, in the number of departures from competitive bidding processes. There is a continuation or a continuous modification of contracts that keeps same service providers, and in cases like this, we need to follow up, or we do follow up, and want to have very clear motivation of why this is happening. There is an increase in audit disputes. There's also an increase in compliance reviews related to PPE equipment from the Fusion Center. There's also where we find accounting officers that procure through deviations, even though the National Treasury has declined such deviations. Quite a lot of poor procurement planning or contract planning practices. And then also poor implementation of projects leading to either contract expansions or single source deviation requests. Poor governance structures and the non-implementation of consequence management on officials who causes irregular expenditure. Some of the operational challenges that we have within this environment, Chair, is that when the deviations was introduced, or in terms of regulation 16A 6.4, it was the exception and not the norm, and we managed this process on an Excel spreadsheet format, in other words a very manual process of applications and keeping track and monitoring it. We find that with the number of submissions that we are currently receiving, we need to start automating that process. We have initiated this process by appointing a service provider to develop an online portal for these submissions from government institutions. We also do not have enough capacity, and this results in delays in processing some of these requests. As you can imagine, we need to read every application with its motivations and apply our knowledge of procurement on projects by government institutions that might be very complex. We also find that in some of our applications that we receive from government institutions, that they are very scarce on information, and that we have to continue probing and asking for additional information, just to find in the end that some of these institutions are not very open and upfront with information. Then also we have an increase in investigations due to the inappropriate use and implementation of emergency procurement procedures. And there we are assisting with some bid and emergency deviation reviews together with the law enforcement agencies at the Fusion Center. So, Chairperson, that was in terms of the deviations and expansions. I will now go into the reporting of the COVID-19 expenditure. And you will probably note that the information is very static. And for that reason, I have asked Tumelu just to be on standby to take the members through the interactive dashboard. The slides that you would see coming are just screenshots of the main pages, and it does not provide proper information that the members would like to see. So, Chairperson and members, you would have, you may recall that in August, the National Treasury issued Instruction Note 11, where we requested government departments to return back to normal procurement processes and not emergency procurement as an automatic response. And in this instruction note, we also requested them to start reporting on COVID expenditure. In this instruction note, we provided a template with basic information that is needed for this analysis. This coincided with the instruction from the president for ministers to publish their COVID expenditure. This instruction note just gave rise or just acted on that instruction by providing a structured format in which the government institutions had to report. The current submission rates are very low. You will see that from April to August, 265 institutions, 8 out of the 805, reported, and so it declined. And then, as you can see, in December, it was only 171 out of the 805 institutions. And here, we are looking at contacting and writing to government institutions that are not complying, but it is quite a arduous task to contact 805 institutions and remind them. So we have provided the members as well with an Excel spreadsheet indicating the departments and government institutions that are not complying to this instruction. This dashboard, this reporting framework, is providing a list of 28 standardized COVID-19 item descriptions. This enables us to provide average pricing information and also flag overpayment based on baseline prices. It also allows us to integrate with the supplier, the central supplier database that can assist us in flagging and informing government entities of individuals and directors of companies that obtained COVID-19 contracts and the amounts of payments that they receive. The dashboard also provides the top 20 suppliers in terms of the orders placed and the payments received. And the bulk of the spend went into sanitizers, masks, and then infrastructure. This dashboard is a very fluid dashboard. In other words, we update this as we get the reports from the government institutions. So the one, today's statistics will not be the same if you go back to the dashboard tomorrow. So as at the date, I think it was the 4th of February, the statistics was that we had, for example, 444 government institutions that placed orders to the value of 19 billion to 8,667 suppliers, and probably about a 9 billion rand worth of payments. This is very high level statistics, and the Excel spreadsheet that was provided actually gives the names of each institution in each province and national departments, as well as public entities that provided information thus far. The table here is also provided in instruction note 11, indicating the deadlines of submission and the report to be published. And as I just mentioned, this is a fluid dashboard, and it changes from day to day. The dashboard was initially it had four dimensions or five dimensions in which we are reporting. The first is a report summary. The second is the items on which we are spending the money, supplier details, a supplier analysis, and then a transaction list. So, Chairperson, the next couple of slides are just screenshots of the main page. And after the presentation, if time permits, I will ask Tumelu just to go into the active or the interactive dashboard for us to see, for example, where we see now the Red Roses Africa. If we drill down into that, you would see the transactions and which departments or department contributed to payment, or and also, you know, you can see drill down right through to the transaction level and the company detail and the directors. The second dimension is in terms of the items that we are spending the money on, and here we have the total payments in terms of items, and we have total payments in terms of services. In the item description, if we would go and drop down on there, you would see the 24 odd standardized equipment or standardized descriptions of the items. And it is quite problematic when departments report and they don't use these standardized descriptions. Here is a view of supplier detail. So you would have supplier's name, the supplier's CSD registration number, the orders that were placed. And if you drill down, you would even see the departments that placed orders on the specific supplier. Here we have the supplier analysis and the name of the directors. So here institutions can verify the directors of a specific company and ensure that we are dealing with suppliers that are not on the restricted suppliers list, as well as directors that are not on that list. Melu will also tell you that we are doing further analysis where we are linking this information to the central supplier database in terms of the demographics of these companies and the directors, in terms of their BEE status. I will go through that list just now, Chair. And there's also report details where you have the institution's name, the items that they procured from which supplier or service, and the unit price, if you are able then to go across. So in terms of the top 10 institutions, we can see that in terms of value, the Department of Health was the largest in terms of placing orders at the value. Infrastructure Development, Gauteng, 2.1 billion. And so we go, and you can see even police, 1.6 billion, and so on. What is interesting is this is the value of orders placed. And I'm just going to go quickly over to this one, where you can see that out of the 4.2 billion for Gauteng Health, 1.4 billion is actually paid. Police placed orders of 1.6, and they paid 1.6. And the same, you can do that comparison. So the challenges that we are experiencing with this reporting is that it is based on a manual Excel process where government institutions need to extract information from their payment systems and order systems into an Excel spreadsheet format that then gets to the National Treasury and imported into this dashboard data warehouse. So it is dependent on the accuracy of the information provided to the National Treasury by the institutions. We are also issuing letters to organs of state, reminding them to report, especially those that are not reporting, and the use of non-standardized item descriptions makes the comparative and average pricing exercise quite difficult. Data quality, as I just mentioned, in some instances are very low due to the incorrect use of either item descriptions or the units of measure, and it makes the consolidation of payments across transactions quite difficult.
I hardly see that scrolling over. If you had written there you want to speak, then let me give you first. I normally look at my SMS on my WhatsApp and also on the...
Please mute who's...
Thank you.
Okay, it's muted, Dr. Tlomo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Okay. The Treasury is busy with a deeper analysis that we will be doing regarding the suppliers that benefited from COVID. Based on their BE status, the ownership, and the demographics of the owners. We will also be linking some of this data to the financial systems data, which is BAS. We are continuously following up with institutions to improve on their submission rate. I can also say that we have appointed service providers, and our economic policy unit is also assisting us with some data scientists to improve on this reporting, not only for COVID, but for future procurement-related information. Because, Chair, you would know that the government does not have an integrated procurement system. It is still very disaggregated, and we need to come up with a reporting structure of all government institutions on procurement-related information. Chair, also in terms of our involvement in cases of alleged fraud, the OCPO is assisting the Fusion Centre to do bid reviews to assist them with their investigations of fraud, corruption, and collusion. We are reviewing the procurement processes of the various institutions, of the cases that the Fusion Center is forwarding to us. You can think that the Fusion Center or the investigators are not all supply chain experts, and therefore they have requested the OCPO to assist in reviewing some of the processes that were followed. The review of the procurement processes are based on the foundational principles of the definition of emergency procurement and the processes that were stipulated either in normal procurement procedures or the various COVID emergency instruction notes that was issued during this period of time. In total, we are involved in assisting on 84 cases. This is information, and I think the information is sitting with Bassani. If anybody needs more detail on this, we can surely provide. So we have 84 cases, 10 is a draft report to the OAG, 19 is in progress, and 55 we are awaiting more information and documents. Thank you, Chair. I think that was all from us in terms of the presentation. I am just requesting whether it is necessary for us to go onto the dashboard itself so that Tumelo can show you how to navigate the dashboard if you need to go into the dashboard in your own time.
How long will that take, ma'am?
Chair, I think it won't take more than 15 minutes.
Okay, let's do it 10 minutes quickly.
Thank you. I will unshare. Tumelo, would you be able to share?
Take up on the crash course and let's see.
Okay. I'll share quickly and then... Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members. It seems like I don't have the rights to share. Perhaps maybe, Estelle, can you get there and then maybe you can drive and then I can just talk to it.
Okay. Okay, can the members see
nothing?
Nothing.
Then,
Chair,
if technology is failing us, I think let's shelve it, and then proceed. What do you think,
Chair? I think maybe we should take a couple of questions, and then I can try and get the dashboard up while we are taking some questions.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see all members who would like to have a bite on this. I see some honorable members have got engagement somewhere. Honorable Sarupen and honorable Sheikh. Honorable members, can I just ask honorable Sarupen 2 minutes to pose these questions before he leaves us, and then after that allow honorable Sheikh. Rabu Sarupen, are you there? Or Rabu Sheikh, come in.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for that opportunity.
I don't have much time, unfortunately. I'm really beginning to miss this committee, but thank you very much for that presentation. I think I'd be interested in one particular issue, and I think you are aware of this, that we found that in the last couple of years, 17,500, as a result of the BEE, 17,500 million has emerged, who have been enriching themselves at the masses. So I'd like to know, based on this, and I think you just did touch on the issue of the BEE companies, I'd like you to perhaps at some stage provide us more information on exactly who these people are and how they benefited, to what extent, so that we'd be able to interrogate this.
Honorable Sheikh, we don't see you. We are cutting your face. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is that okay now?
Yes.
All right. So yeah, I'll just, like I said, I'm more interested in the issue of the BEE companies that were awarded some of these contracts and then have been found wanting. And you know what, the stats that we have, Chairperson, that whilst the level of inequality in South Africa is increasing at an alarming rate, 17,500 millionaires have been created in South Africa as a result of this BEE. So I would like to know exactly who these BEE people, how they benefited, what they benefited, so that we could start addressing this. Whether the BEE system is actually promoting corruption in a way, or whether there's enough mechanisms in place to ensure that it is actually empowering people and advancing black economic empowerment in South Africa, but not for the wrong reasons. I'll stop there. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Okay. Members, let's see. Let me just see. Would like to have a bite on the presentation by the OCTO. Let's hear, honorable members.
Matafa.
Mlenzana.
Honorable Matafa. Honorable Mlenzana.
Tlangwini.
Honorable Tlangwini.
Dipuo Peaches.
Honorable Peters.
Dikhale.
Kaiso.
Honorable Dikhale. Honorable Kaiso.
Mare was up from the beginning.
Honorable Mare. Honorable Mare.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Did I leave anybody out? No. Again, let's try 5 minutes maximum. Honorable members, I'll start with Honorable Matafa.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair, honorable members, and the team from the OCPO. Chair, I just have a few questions. The first one is a high-level question with regards to contract extension. Now, the reason provided is that in most cases, it is due to the new tender not being finalized in time or the new tender not being finalized. I have a strong feeling, Chair, that this is an omission on the side of those that are responsible to ensure that the tender is concluded. Because my view is that if you know that a contract will expire in a particular period, you will advertise, taking into account the time it will take to adjudicate, as well as the setup time that is available. Now, the question that I have is, what measures are available to the OCPO or national
Did you lose Honorable Matafa? Hello?
Hopefully not.
Did you lose Honorable Matafa?
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay, let's go to Honorable Mlenzana.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning. Perhaps let me just show face, just to show the colleagues that at least I am now beginning to be up and running. But as I continue, Chair, I will switch off the video. Let me appreciate, Chair, the presentation. But then just pick on only two things. Follow up on Honorable Shaikh Iman on the BEE story. But for me, it would be to check if the Chief Procurement Officer is able to detect if there is any fronting. If they are able to detect fronting, what tools are they using for such? And if then they are doing such, has there anything that has been picked up to say, yes, we have begun to see that there is fronting and the abuse of the BEE by the would-be powerful beings? Then the second one would go to the deviation part, but also I know some applications for deviation have not been approved and some have been approved. But my interest, Chair, is mostly with Eskom. Why was it not possible to foresee that Eskom was facing procurement challenges and hence the need for that 67 million deviation? And also, who is in charge of procurement and what skills are there in terms of qualification, experience, and all of the personnel that is responsible for procurement at Eskom? I've got reasons, Chair, for these questions, but I will come back later on if I do have. But then the last one, also on Eskom, can Treasury confirm if Eskom, when I'm saying Treasury, true, of course, the procurement officer, can it be confirmed that Eskom actually received the tariff increase approval of 15%? If so, how far will it go in resolving the financial difficulties faced by Eskom? I will take only those questions for now, listen to the responses, after which then I will come back if you give me another bite. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mlenzana. Honorable Ntlangwini, it's your turn.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you to Estelle and her team for the presentation. I must say, Chairperson, it's with great disappointment that Yon and the Chief Procurement Office always report on poor performance, procurement planning, lack of consequences. It seemingly has been a trend for the past couple of 3 to 4 years, if not many. And I just like to find out what is, because this office or this sector of part of the office is supposed to assist us in curbing wasteful and wasting and expenditures. And it seems that they are not winning. What is the capacity of the office? Do they lack support? Do they lack office staff? What is it that they need to effectively do their work? Because when I look at this specific component, it's supposed to assist in terms of curbing wasteful and sort of also help following the money and not being just a blanket or blank check to departments to use the government's money. Chair, on the deviations, I'm just concerned and I want to ask on PRASA. because Estelle noted that some of the deviations in PRASA is on technical assistance and national private security. But this PRASA haven't not even spent the capital budget. Why would they want to have a deviation for technical assistance if they haven't even spent on the capital budget? Really, it's of great concern that they are the second largest contributor to the deviations. Then even on the compensation fund, Chair, to do a deviation for office space, when are we going to move away from office rentals and as a not try to get our office spaces and buy it, then to forever go on rentals and so and such, because we are spending a whole lot of money on making other people rich and the country is suffering and every cent counts, and we are really in a dire state that we need to have and save every cent that we can save. Then on the health deviation as well, it would just be interesting to hear on the deviations. We know maybe perhaps some of the deviations is to also the procurement of the vaccines. What is now going to happen to those vaccines that was bought by the Department of Health that have a low efficiency and the expiry date is in April? What now are we going to do? Will those vaccines just be a waste? What will now this department do to ensure that going ahead, that we ensure that dying such, whether it's equipment or vaccines, that it's not a wasteful expenditure like the last time when in PRASA when we bought trains and we found out that trains don't fit to the capacity. What is this department having in place to ensure that when we are doing such procurement, there is someone from the team that is also assisting with procurement specifications and so forth, that we just not buy like you are going to buy something on Wish and then you don't get what you have seen, what you are buying. So this is quite a lot of money. And then on slide 17, Chair, pertaining to the accounting authorities and accounting officers who procure through deviations even without approval from National Treasury, what are the PMFA provisions against such conduct and why are they not enforced in such cases? Has the office looked at other countries to see how to ensure strict enforcement and consequences management against who implements expansions and without prior approval? Do you have any of that in place? And then the last one, Chair, is on slide 17 with the increased department from the competitive bidding process. Is there what seems to be the major reason for this trend and who is the major culprits in that regard? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nhlanhla. Honorable Matafa is coming.
Thank you, Chair. Through your permission, Chair, may I please keep my video off? I think my connection is failing me.
Perfect.
Chair, yeah, as I was cut off, I was speaking on the issue of transformation. I was interested to find out in terms of the number of suppliers that received COVID-19 emergency procurement. Out of the 8,600, does the OCPO have an indication of how many of these companies are owned by women? And I think this point also speaks to what Honorable Mlenzana raised about fronting. And then coupled to that, there is a mention on slide 16 of a deeper analysis that needs to be done regarding the suppliers that benefited from COVID-19 transaction on their BEE ownership and demographic of the ownership. Now, the interest there is on the time frames. Are there time frames in which we can expect to have feedback with regards to this particular analysis? And also with that, is it not in the OCPO scope of operation to monitor these contracts prior to them being awarded so that preventative measures can be taken, unlike having to follow and try to correct things that would have happened and we find ourselves a few steps behind those that might have been in the wrong? And the last one, Chair, in terms of the discrepancies, in terms of the payments that have been made to those that have benefited in the emergency procurement, we note that there is a major allocation, which is reflected on slide 7, that is made to Red Rose Africa and Masikame Trading. Is there any specific reason why there is such a significant share of the overall COVID-19 payment as compared to the rest of the suppliers? I will pause there, Chair. Thank you very much for allowing me a second bite to my engagement. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matafa. Honorable Peters, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would also request that I be allowed to switch off my video. If are you agreeing, Chairperson?
Yes, yes, please continue, Honorable Peter.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honorable, I need to take this opportunity to thank the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer for the presentation, but also to indicate, Chairperson, in the same vein that Honorable Matafa seemed to have taken 3 points from the areas that I would have spoken to, especially the one of the number of companies owned by women who benefited from COVID-19 procurement, and the issue of slide 16 and the Red Roses issue. You have covered it well, Comrade Matafa. I think, thank you very much for that. Chairperson, I want to know from the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, whether they do have capacity to deal with the volumes of requests for extensions, deviations, and modifications within the requisite time frames that they are supposed to. And do departments or organs of state create the environment for these deviations, modifications, and extensions? Because it seems to me that the conditional support that the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer and Treasury gives always exceeds the direct support. And why? It seems there's collusion between the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer and entities to allow for this conditional support. Because conditional support shows an amount, number of 21, and then for the actual support, they give a support what Honorable Sanguini said with regard to government investing in old, its own properties to make it possible that the monies that are being used to rent can be released to directly service the community of South Africa. Chairperson, slide 19 is worrying on the trends and observations. Who are the main culprits in all these 11 trends, Office of the Chief Procurement Officer? Are these repeat offenders? Can the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer give the committee more details? And what consequences does National Treasury mete out to accounting officers who, despite being declined continue doing that which they wanted to do. Because it means that people go to request for deviations and or more extensions and still say, we will go ahead irrespective, because they know that it will then go to SCOPA or it will be qualified as irregular and then end up going to SCOPA and they're going to get a condonation. On slide 20, investigations which have the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer has done, I would want to know the success rate with these law enforcement agencies, especially if you look at the number of cases that you would have dealt with. I'm also interested, Chairperson, in the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer providing the committee with information on the last 5 years, the number of investigations that they did that were referred to law enforcement officers that were carried through to the end result. Have we seen people being arrested for wrongdoing, if any? We want to know that. Slide 28, provinces which invested in quarantine and isolation facilities or even created field hospitals, were they fully utilized? Because I would want to know whether there would have been instances where there was over capacity and the facilities were not utilized fully, especially where it was hotels and hotels have been paid huge sums of money. Like, for example, we see the amounts that were paid to Lagoon Beach Hotel, and it seems to be a standard amount that shows that four different periods or four different contracts were signed, but the amount is the same. On slide 35, which organs of state have not reported by province and even those nationally? It is important for us to know. And the incident, Chairperson, lastly, of franging. How rife was it in the COVID-19 procurement process? And what recourse does this office do or have for companies or for those who have found franging? And again, Chairperson, I want to insist, we need to know how many companies owned by women and the youth and people with disabilities benefited from this COVID-19 procurement, especially in view of the relaxed guidelines that were provided. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. Honorable Tihale, and Honorable members, please mute, Honorable members. Let's allow Honorable Tihale to take the stage. Honorable Tihale.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the opportunity and greetings to all the colleagues. I'm sure I have greeted. I will do as the other members did by switching off my video chair. Let me take this opportunity and welcome the presentation by the Chief Procurement Officers. Members have said a mouthful, Chair. Truly speaking, the presentation is not pleasing to our ears. If you listen to the presentation and all the way you hear about the failure, you know, you just end up saying, yeah, Parliament is in a serious danger. And that is why when you check on the TV, for example, on the Zondo Commission, one other guy from the department was saying the members of Parliament are failing Parliament because they don't know what they're doing. So I think what the members have raised and what I'm going to put an emphasis on will be followed up very strictly so that tomorrow we have been seen doing our work. I want to put an emphasis on the issue of the trends and observations, because we are not being told who really contributed to the poor procurement planning, poor governance structure, non-implementation of consequences management, We are not being told about who are those people. Maybe as the Honorable Dipuo put it clearly, that did they really consider the women and people with disabilities when they were issuing out this campaign? I'm sure it's not them who contributed to the failure. And the other thing that I want to know, Chair, what is it that they did? Or let me just put it clearly, that what type of punishment are they putting on these different people who are tendering and ended up making the process to be a failure? Because I believe if you win a tender, you would have followed all the requirements. But then at the end of the day, if you fail the system, what type of measures are they really giving these people? Well, on the PPE, we normally receive the pictures that are just trending on the social media, whereby people were using the sanitizers and their hands were damaged. This one is just from me, it's not from the presentation. I just want to check if ever they did come across this type of a challenge, and if ever indeed the sanitizers, for example, were not safe for the people, what is it that they did? If ever, because we are just receiving the pictures, it's from the other countries, it's not from our country, then we are safe. Honorable Ndlangwini touched on the issue of the offices, but I just want to say, if ever the person who is really checking or doing his work every day in the office when it comes to administration, can you really not know when is the lease of the office renter is coming to an end? This is also a challenge, Chair. Maybe we will receive a clarity. The Honorable Sheikh touched on the issue of maybe that we should receive or know the companies that failed the whole processes. I think if we can have their names mentioned, it will assist even them tomorrow, so that they shouldn't repeat the same companies that failed the system. Thank you very much. That's my contribution.
Thank you, Honorable Bihale. Honorable Mare, please mute.
It's me. Yeah, guys. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mare.
Yes.
Yes, Honorable Kai, so then you'll get after him.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Kaiso.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and greetings. Chair, you know, this presentation, it's quite depressing. I wish we could have asked to be clarified first, what is the responsibility of the Office of the Chief Procurement Office, even before we go into the presentation or at the introductory part of it, because now there's more questions than what is presented there has been the progress under review on the Office of the Chief Procurement. So I just wanted to mention that. Well, a number of areas that my colleagues have touched, have already touched. But I also want to, you know, go to slide 17 on the deviation without approval, for instance. Deviation without approval and without any consequence is a very serious problem. So we actually were not supposed to be told only that that was the thing that was noted as a progress. It would have been better if we hear that now. Then there were people who were held accountable about this deviation, which does not have any approval from the Treasury. I don't know why the Treasury would keep quiet for such things to happen. You know, people executing deviation without any approval. So it's a serious problem for me to can understand or comprehend that. So now, my one question is that now, reading into what was unfolding during procurement, I just want to check with the presenter that as to what compliance did you find any compliance with the Employment Equity Act as these service providers or companies were doing business were compliant with the because the act does state that in order for the government to accept a service provider or company, it has also to finish with the compliance in terms of Employment Equity Act. Secondly, is during the procurement of PPEs, can you give a breakdown of provinces, people who come from each provinces, how was it distributed, you know, all those who are doing a business so that we can see the distribution, it covered all the provinces quite well, that even local people, because the emphasis as we are talking about economic recovery, we are also talking, referring also to your upliftment of economy of at the local level. So is there any breakdown that show us now, at least at an each and every province level, the distribution of the procurement was such that now even local people were able to, you know, get opportunity to can do a business, especially the small medium enterprises. So if you can have that breakdown, it will also inform us moving forward. On the breakdown in terms of, I agree with my colleagues that the issue of gender and disability transformation and the youth is quite important, but there is no information that emanate from the presentation. It will be better that we are given that breakdown information in terms of gender disability transformation, including youth. Gender, they are preferably be on the woman's side because they are ones who are mostly disadvantaged economically when it comes to that. So now, my third question is, has the Chief Procurement Officer identified major discrepancies in terms of payment for the same quality items by different government departments? Because you'd find, for instance, a company A sales or service provider A has an N95 mask selling at 500 rand, and the other one, the person or sells that at 20 rand. Are you able to make a sample breakdown as to, even when it comes to procurement of these particular consumables, clinical consumables, you are able to read now that there is a consistency in terms of pricing, etc. Are you able to provide that background? Because it's very, very much important, because some people have found the opportunity to exploit the state by being so rogue in terms of pricing. So, yeah. So, Chairperson, those were the few questions. Let me stop here and I'll come if there's any other thing that I need to ask. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Mare, now it's your turn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, I will be very quick. One question straight down the line. It's all about the accounting officers at the very institutions who deviate from the procurement rules as being stipulated. My question would be, the Treasury Department, do they have teeth to act immediately, to either recommend disciplinary action and to put people on compulsory leave? Because that's where the thing starts with that procurement process. So if we can actually address it at that point and make people examples who deviate, then we will be much better off in the government. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Mare. If I may ask, Honourable Matafa, is there anything which came to your mind? One question? Second bite? Honourable Mlenza, on a second bite?
No, sir, I'm fine. I'm fine, sir.
Honourable Tlangwini?
Your chair, you sprinted on us. We thought we were going to respond and then we come for a second bite.
Okay, Honorable Tikhale Peters.
Yes, Mr. President, if they can answer, after which then we give we're given chance at least for the second part.
Okay.
As follow up question, if you have time, please. Sir.
Okay, let's try that. Let me come in and let me also welcome the presentation, and I must say, Estelle, that too many questions than answers. The presentation raises a lot of questions. Let me start by saying, and I think we need Treasury to respond to this one, that since the departure of Mr. Brown, I think it was in 2017, the Chief Procurement Office has been on an acting position. And I don't need to say much that for such an important institution, I don't think you need people to act there. For a number of reasons, we need a permanent person. But I think the DG should tell us exactly what is the problem. Since 2017, there have been different people acting in that, and it does create problems for us and for the country in general. And another general observation I'll make, I think there is generally a pedestrian approach on the matters raised here, which are coming up from this office. And the areas around this, they are from the SCM, right? As I said at the beginning, I was deliberately saying people should tell us, what do you mean by deviation? And it simply means that people saying, allow us not to follow the procurement policies and processes. That's what it says, right? And there are reasons why this parliament came up with the laws for to be followed when it comes to procurement. There's a reason why different institutions will have procurement policies to be followed. Because as we know, there is no place in these institutions and in these departments, right, as problematic as the question of procurement. That's where you find corruption and malfeasance. That's where you find collusion between officials and some of the private companies. That's where you find a lot of rent seeking. So we can't afford to be pedestrian when it comes to these things. Honourable members, I think the question that I think before we end today's session, which I'll challenge you to apply your minds on. Now, this has been put to us. We have identified problematic areas. We have got suggestions and so on. Then, so what? What happens after this? What are we saying? Because what happens? It ends up being a tick box type of an exercise. We have gone through this thing, and next year around this time again, we'll be faced by the very same thing, and then and so on and so forth. So the question which I think we as members of this committee should be able to answer before we leave with these things, what are we then saying, right? So that we don't find ourselves having to deal with a similar problem next year. It looks like there are perennial problem children, if you like, in this instance. But I want to pick up on EFCOM, which seems to be a biggest contributor to this.
As you know, that this parliament has approved 49 billion rand in financial year 2020. 2020-21, 56 billion rand. 21-22, we're spending about 31.7 billion rand. The assumption from our side is that when this money is being spent, it's going to be spent according to the laws of this country. This is huge money. And as you know, honorable members, whenever we come up with this recapitalization of Eskom, South Africans are not hip about it. But I think they are going to be even more unhappy if they found out that most of this money, when it's being spent, the laws are not being followed. So I just thought one needs to underline that. Accounting authorities and accounting officers, at the end of the day, if these things don't happen, for instance, the oral members, Oral Peters and other members were talking about the complete disregard of what the OCPO is saying, right? Somebody must take responsibility and there should be consequences. Accounting authorities and accounting officers, they must report, and we need to know exactly each and everyone where the OCPO was disregarded and people continued, what happened, right? Where deviations were denied and people continued, why were they applying in the first place? So I think accounting authorities, accounting officers have got a duty to they must take responsibility and would like to be told exactly what happened. Otherwise, you get into what you call a moral hazard, where people know it well. All what will happen, we'll go, we'll report, and as honorable members were saying, we'll go and report, and that's it. But these are huge sums of money, as I said, that's an area where you find a lot of collusion between private sector companies and people who are inside. So we can't just be pedestrian when we deal with these things. Still, can we have, for the past 5 years, the top five deviators? Can we have that for the past 5 years? Now, I just want to get from you, how do you know? Because one of the reasons why you'll allow people to deviate is when there's a sole supplier, right? So I'm saying, how do you know there's a sole supplier? Because somebody may have entered the market between last year and now, and the economic parlance will say, you can't have a complete knowledge of the market. So how do you know? Then we say no. There's only Buthelezi who can provide this thing. So I would like to know that. And how do you prove it after you've been told by institution that there is a sole supplier? What process do you get in? And we also want to hear from you if you could just expand on this one as to the things that you consider for giving variations and expansions. Then when you were talking about trends, and the oral members have spoken about this, right? Where we say there's an increased departure from a competitive bidding process. Huge problem, right? It ties in again with what we're saying, the question of lack of consequences. If there are no consequences, you get into a moral hazard problem, and where people know nothing's going to happen to them. And then this, and when they see that nothing happens to company A or to department A, other departments and other SOEs will also follow. And I'm not surprised, that's what we are getting. Now, Estelle, I want to know, at National Treasury, I know at some stage this matter came up, who approves deviations and expansions? I don't want names. I want to say, is it an individual or is it a committee? And who constitute that committee, not in terms of names, but in terms of positions? Because these are huge decisions when people must deviate from the law. Who takes that decision? I know at some stage there was a problem that it was only an individual who took such decisions of billions of rents. What is the process now? And I think we would also like to know what is being done to try and increase capacity at your office. We can't come here and say we don't have capacity yet. We've got such a big responsibility in the whole of government. Also, do you have time frames as far as getting integrated procurement system? Estelle and your team, can you please respond to the issues which have been raised by the oral members? Thank you. And Estelle, if you don't have an answer, please don't try to get one. You rather say, no, I don't have an answer. We'll come back on this and then we write, because these are very, very important things. And oral members, I've also given you a challenge that after this thing, what are we then saying? Estelle, please come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Will it be fine that I don't show my video, also just for connectivity purposes?
Perfect.
Thank you very much. I'm going to also request some of my colleagues to assist me with more of the technical questions. There's quite a few that relates to the analysis of the procurement information or the COVID-19 transaction information, and especially around the gender issues and the disability and members of the youth. As I said in the presentation earlier, is that Tumelo's team, together with some data scientists, are busy analyzing and scrubbing this information to actually get to that kind of detail with regards to the BE demographics, the women, youth and disability demographics, the ownership demographics. So hopefully, Chair, at the next session, we would be able to provide that kind of demographics. At the moment, we are in the process, and as I also said, the quality of the information that we are receiving is not very suitable at the moment for a very accurate analysis. With regards to, let me just see if I go through the list. Number two, the OCPO do have capacity challenges in terms of the number of institutions that we need to support. We do work very closely with our public finance and IGR departments or branches within the National Treasury on the day-to-day activities of government institutions, and when they do ask for deviations and expansions, that we in cases where we are worried, that we would engage with public finance and IGR in terms of the reasons that they found that the government institutions are asking, and if they are aware of these deviations and expansion requests. We can surely do a list, Chair, of the main culprits. We can do an analysis and we will provide it to the committee of the top culprits of the last 5 years and supply that to the members. With regards to the list of institutions that are not reporting on COVID, the Excel spreadsheet that was provided gives us the list of all 805 odd institutions that are supposed to report that on each of the reporting periods. It indicates who has and who has not provided reports. It can be that certain institutions, especially the smaller ones, would not have done any procurement and therefore have not reported, but that is something that we need to analyze as well and find out, especially on the bigger departments that we know would have had procurement on COVID related items. We can surely follow up on those departments, and that's specifically relates to Department of Health, Police, Social Development, or SASA, Transnet, Eskom, these kind of institutions that we know would have procured, we can follow up with them. With regards to the deviation without approval, we share your concern and would therefore also the information that is supplied to the members in this session to help us ask those kind of questions to the accounting officers when you do meet with them. And we can provide you with that information. We can provide you with a schedule of the instances that we have come across of deviations that was denied or declined, and the department still went ahead. The consequences of that, chairperson, is that if the National Treasury had declined such a deviation, and the accounting officer goes ahead with that procurement, it will then result in irregular expenditure, as rightfully said. That will then be declared as irregular expenditure either by the National Treasury or the Auditor General. And in those cases, there is a very stringent irregular expenditure framework that then it provides a process that the government institution will have to go through before they can request for condoning such irregular expenditure. And that includes like a determination whether there was criminality involved, whether the institution suffered any losses, and also proof of consequences or consequence management of officials and people that were responsible for that irregular expenditure. I know that this is a reactive process. Unfortunately, with so many institutions and the capacity that we have and also the mandate that we have, is that we do not have that capability of realizing these things upfront and prevent it. We wish we could, but unfortunately, the way the processes are done is that at the moment it is very reactive. With regards to maybe the rogue pricing, I think this is also a matter of demand and supply in the market, especially during the period where everybody was competing for items in the market, and suppliers having the power, the balance, or the bargaining power to ask prices that are beyond normal. And therefore, the Treasury did issue a price list that is based on average prices that we found in the market at that point in time. I think we issued probably 3 or 4 reiterations of the pricing schedule, and the information that is provided to us through the reporting mechanism can in some instances show us where there is major outliers in terms of the pricing, and that we will follow up as well. And in a lot of those cases, it's already with the law enforcement agencies for investigation, especially the ones that has already been found in the media as well. I think with regards to the CPO vacancy, Chair, you will have to ask that question to the Director General. We had that same question at SCOPA yesterday. I know that they did interviews last year in July, and the interviews were not successful, and they are in the process of doing a headhunting exercise. But with regards to the status of that, you will have to maybe request the Director General for the process. The The responsibility of the OCPO is mainly to draft the rules of engagement. In other words, the rules on how procurement should happen. It is up to the accounting officers to make sure that they follow these rules. On the other hand, the OCPO should be in a position to do monitoring and make sure that governance structures are in place. And at the moment, I feel that in that area, the CPO is lacking due to the fact that we are so overburdened with the administration of all these deviation requests, that we are not in a position to do effective monitoring as we are supposed to do. If we do the monitoring, we do a monitoring chair up front. We have procurement plans that are submitted to the Treasury. We do have quarterly reports from institutions on the progress of procurement plans. And we use that mechanism to also be proactive to ensure that the deviations that they request or the procurement is actually happening in terms of the procurement plans. And as I said earlier, we are working together with public finance and our budget analysts to also understand maybe some of the reasons for these deviations. Chair, I don't know if I had missed out anything. If any of my colleagues may want to answer, I would ask the chair to allow them.
Yes, you may continue with that.
Thank you. Just see, I'm not seeing any hands from my colleagues.
OCPO, is there anyone who'd like to come in on and emphasize perhaps on some of the things that have been raised by Estelle, or would like to respond to some of the questions that we have asked?
Yes, Chair, through you, if you allow me. Can I also request not to switch on the video, Chairperson? My connection is also not so stable. And I will add on a couple of pointers that the CPO has alluded to, Chairperson. And the first matter that I just wanted to add to Chair is the issue related to fronting and whether we are able to detect fronting and what can be done or what is done when fronting has been detected. Chairperson, fronting can only be detected through the evaluation of documents that have been submitted during the tender processes. And that is the process that is done during the evaluation of that specific tender. The only way the National Treasury can pick up by itself if there has not been any kind of a complaint that has been submitted to the Treasury that there is possible fronting in a particular tender is instances where National Treasury would have written to the department, a particular department, and request documents to review that particular tender. And when a fronting is then suspected through that process, we rope in our BBBEE Commission colleagues to assist us with the investigation of the fronting. And where the investigation has been concluded, Chairperson, and it is found to be factual that a particular bidder has been involved in some collusive and or fronting behavior, then the process or there is regulations that allow for that particular bidder or service provider to be restricted from doing business with government for a particular period of time. Now, Chairperson, it's also important to note that it is the responsibility of the accounting officers again and the accounting authorities to initiate once investigations have been done the process of restricting suppliers in the supplier database. I think currently at the moment we have about 138 service providers, Chairperson, on the database, and there are a number of them that have been restricted within that 138 for collusive behavior and fronting. Chairperson, I also, you know, to talk to the issues of poor performance and poor planning, and the fact that it has been a trend over a period of time that leads to deviations, and that leads to expansions and extension of contracts. Chair, I think this is a matter that I personally believe that needs to be looked at holistically and more strategically by looking at SCM units within the departments and the entities themselves, because I believe that when government has got systems and officials appointed into positions within the units, and there are processes that have been put in place, these units are treated as strategic units and have the table on the executive table, and not treat supply chain just as a function on the corner there. Supply chain should be able to deal with the matters that it's supposed to. I feel that supply chain needs to be properly capacitated within the department, Chairperson, to deal with the strategic procurement, because it is one of the key drivers of service delivery. So if we do it properly, I believe that we can be able to deal with some of these issues. As CPO has alluded, National Treasury's OCPO is a policymaker insofar as a procurement is concerned, and we then monitor and follow up on issues of non-compliance, Chairperson. But I think we must emphasize the responsibilities that the accounting officers and the accounting authorities have over these processes, Chairperson. And the responsibilities they have according to the PFMA on ensuring that there's appropriate action that is taken when consequence management is required, Chair. Chair, to talk to the issues that of why does OCPO give conditional support to deviations and expansions, Chairperson. You know, Chair, when you deal with these issues, in most cases, as CPO alluded, these are supposed to be exceptional cases where it should be impractical for departments or entities to go out on tender, whether it be because of an emergency or because there is no other service provider in the market to provide the services, and that's what we call sole supplier, or simply just because there is no time or any other reason, Chairperson. It is quite important to take consideration of service delivery at that point in time. But in taking consideration of service delivery at that point in time, it also becomes important to make consideration of the risks that the department or the entities would be faced with by procuring using a deviation mechanism. So if we find ourselves in a position where we have to support a request for deviation or contract modification, and to ensure that we service delivery continues, and we do not impede on the department's ability to give the people of South Africa their rights, whether to education or to health or whatever the case that may be, we may support the particular deviation, but raise the critical risks and concerns that we may have, that we would want the department or the entity to take further action on and satisfy themselves and ourselves that they are mitigating strategies to those risks that would have been raised through our letter. Chair, I think in that I would have also covered the kind of things that we consider when we look at the process of considering variations and deviations. It is a lengthy process, Chairperson. It is a process that we rely on the departments and the entities to submit substantial information, documentation for us to have evidence of what they are saying. Sometimes we have to go as far as doing site visits to check what the institutions are leading to, the projects that they are involved in, sort of, so that to satisfy ourselves that what the departments and entities are saying would be truthful. And therefore, in that capacity, it's quite become very important to ensure that then the responses are done on time, Chairperson, and it becomes critical that we look into these matters in that fashion, Chair. I think I've covered quite a bit, Chairperson, from what has been asked. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairperson?
Yes.
I also have Ms. Mpo Nomalu that says that she is struggling to raise her hand, so I'm going to ask, with your permission, for her to also add.
Please.
Check us. In a libugalist case, I fail. I don't call the Fabiani suit. There are both for him.
Matafa.
Chairperson.
Please mute.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I'm muting. Thank you.
Okay. So
thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mpo Nomalo, and I'm within the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, responsible for policy and legal. I just wanted to put in context the understanding as to what exactly the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer is responsible for. And our responsibility is to manage the development and issuance of uniform norms and standards to enable a fair, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective procurement system for all organs of state when contracting for goods and services. And in issuing those norms and standards, we need to also ensure that those directives issued must also provide for the advancement of persons or categories of persons disadvantaged by unfair discrimination, including categories of preference in the allocation of contracts. So basically, our responsibility is more of regulatory. But while we also doing that, we have different chief directorates with different responsibilities, ensuring this fairness and uniform norms and standards and applications, governance, monitoring, and compliance ensures that there is governance applied within institutions and they monitor those performances, including ensuring that compliance. But at the same time, there are other aspects that we do to ensure that in realizing some of the economies of scale, there's transversal contracts and strategic procurement. And we also have the systems to assist us in ensuring that we are effective. But there are a number of questions that were also asked. Basically, I want to go to the treasury regulations. That the question that, just to enforce what Basani just indicated earlier on, regarding why are we not able to detect fronting? Regulation 16A6, when procuring goods and services, it stipulates that it is the responsibility of the accounting officer to ensure that there is a bid committee system established. And that bid committee system established is this bid specification, where you establish a committee that looks at the specification prior to going out on a bid, on a tender, and the evaluation committee is separate from the bid specification committee, and then the bid adjudication committee. So this happens within the institution. So in this regard, we are also ensuring that as the OCPO, we are not referees and the player. The PFMA gives responsibility to accounting officer. So the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer would not be in a position now to be taking over the functions of the accounting officer. So it is in this regard that in most cases, these provisions are we adhere to also. Then there is a section 16A 6.9, a section 16A 9 of the Treasury Regulations, which is also avoiding abuse of supply chain management system. Again, this responsibility is for the accounting officer to ensure that they take all reasonable steps to prevent abuse of
Mpoa is still on. Honourable members are still there.
Chair, it seems like we may have lost Mpoa.
Anybody else before I allow other members to come in again?
Chair, I'm also seeing Tumelo Nhlaba, who's responsible for the dashboard and SEM ICT within the OCPO.
Tumelo, please come in.
Thank you very much, Chair. To also remind the members that they on the portal itself, on the dashboard portal, you'll be able to get the actual details of transactions. And this relates to the question that was raised regarding Red Roses Africa and Masikame, I think. So if you check the two, it's publicly available information of which the link to the dashboard is available on the last slide on the presentation. If members can just follow that particular link, they'll be able to draw through or click just on that name of those particular companies. They'll see the actual transactions. So specifically for Red Roses Africa, they did business with South African Police Services and they were providing masks and sanitizers. And the other one Honorable Matafa asked about was Masikame. That one, they did business with a number of departments in the Western Cape. They were also providing various PPE items ranging from sanitizers, masks, soaps, and a number of things, but they are listed on that particular portal. If members can just go through, they'll be able to get those actual details and the dates and what they bought. Thank you, Chair.
Estelle, that's it, am I right?
Yes, Chair. I don't see any other hands from my colleagues.
Okay. The honourable members had said that they wanted the second bite. I will start with Honourable Matafa quickly.
No, I'm covered, Chair. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, mine is more of a comment than a question. Perhaps then the Chief Procurement Officer would dispute my observation if she can. We are looking here at a situation where there is more of a talk than practice. What you are getting here is more of theory, the more of the supposed to be, the more of the wishes of all of us, both the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer and our bell. But then you are at a situation where the Chief Procurement Officer is actually literally saying to us, there is no teeth to bite. If you listen into this later comment, for instance, answer where it is clear that there is nothing much that the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer can do. It all lies with the accounting officers of the various entities and departments. The very accounting officers who have let down the government to where it is now. That's my comment, Chair. Perhaps the Chief Procurement Officer will come in and dispute my observation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lenzana. And as I said to, I said I'm posing a question to the honorable members if they
so wish to say, with all this, what then? Honorable Ntlangwini?
Thank you very much, Chair. I don't have a follow-up question, but just a remark. As to say, like, that is why it's so important for the DG to, would have been also been here, to sort of give us also, like, politically a leader, direction as the head of the department. Because there are pertinent issues that we are asking, and we maybe the staff are not in the position to answer, and rightfully so. So I think really that letter needs to get out and say that we really need to have him in the next meeting where National Treasury is presenting. No apologies. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntlangwini. Honorable Peter, she just requested to rush somewhere. Honorable Tekgale, she's coming back. Honorable Tekgale.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tekgale. Honorable Kaiso.
Yeah, thank you, Comrade Chair, Honorable Chair. You asked the committee a question, and the question was, what should we do then after we have explored all this presentation today? But I think, let me start by commenting by saying that the Auditor General's report has said something with regard to the procurement of PPE. So if all of us, we can recall how bad the report was reflecting on various outcome of the audit. It does, after this presentation, I do now see that what the Auditor General was actually referring to. So I don't think after that report, is there anything that now the office, the Chief Procurement Office has learned anything out of that report to say, no, look, we have to do things very differently now. So it does indicate that weakness, Honorable Chair, that it doesn't seem that the procurement office has read anything as to what the Auditor's General report was saying, that they should be able to see that they have a challenge with regard to overburden of work, and therefore they need to put more staff to assist or to can be able to arrest all the mess that is happening there. And also the fact that they were able to see that there's a malalignment of supply chain centers across. It's only happened after 5 years or after 4 years, let me say. So you cannot detect that after 4 years or many years that there's a malalignment of procurement services or centers, supply chain services centers. So it's a serious problem, that one that needs to be fixed as soon as yesterday. So now we were supposed to be told actually the correct way, that we shouldn't be receiving, there's an overburden, there's a malalignment. We should be receiving report that now all the centers of the supply chain have been aligned so that now they conform to the practice and the principle in the office of the Chief Procurement Office. Yesterday we received a report that in as far as Yeah, when we were receiving a third quarter report from Treasury, there was a report that indicates to Treasury. So now I don't know what is the relationship between that and this work that we are seeing here, because it's very much important to read the two pages. So hence I'm saying that there has to be this office has to go back to drawing board and and actually come up with a very clear, a very, very, very clear plan how to assist all this institution, you know, and also its work should actually reflect its existence. It's very much important because you cannot have an institution which does not show, I mean, display its existence. Why did we have this office of called procurement or chief procurement office? It was actually to rescue all these situations which was taking shaping on the ground, which does not conform to the practice of Treasury when it comes to procurement. But now it can be this office again, which now creates problem of not being able to live, I mean, to manage the situation which has arisen. It should be able to live up to its existence as this office. So now, so that's what I was proposing, Chair, that despite that it has to go back and provide some answers, but this office, really it has to be, the Treasury has to be, I agree with Honorable Ntanguin that maybe the DG was supposed to have been here also to assist us because it reflects very bad, this report actually. In summary, it reflects very bad about the issue of procurement. Remember, we come up from the very difficult situation of being hammered about the issue of, you know, mess in as far as procurement of PPE is concerned through the report of the Auditor General. So let me pause and I may actually stop here, Chair, with my comments and proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Mare. Honorable Mare.
I'm fine, sir. I'm fine.
Okay. Thank you. Perhaps I don't think I had the correct answer, Estelle. I'd ask who approves or disapproves deviations and expansions. I said, is it an individual or a committee, and how is it constituted? If I would like to hear you on that.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Estelle, just note that you are going to answer with the other issues which have been done. Honourable members, again, I think it's very important that we don't get out of this meeting with a misconception which equates broad-based political empowerment with malfeasance and corruption. You remember, for instance, when it comes to the PPEs, that a minister reported that about 70% of the beneficiaries of the PPEs were not your B, triple B companies or women-owned companies. So if it's very important that we, because that may end up sterilizing what we are trying to do with procurement processes and maligning black companies, which is not our intention. As we have always said, that we want to use the budget, want to use our procurement to ensure that we try and deal with the legal apartheid, which has marginalized black people of this country, women and people living with disabilities. So it's very important that we don't get out of this meeting with that misconception. Yes, Honorable Peter, let me finish, then I'll allow you in. Honorable Peter? Honorable Peter, can you hear
yes,
me?
Yes, Chair.
Can you leave that? Can you leave that? Okay. and I would like to make this statement, and I'll please comment if you want to.
say that in most cases, the conditions of deviation and expansion are man-made or woman-made, if you like, but they are created so that people can find a reason of not following the law and the policies. Your comment. We definitely need time frames of integrated procurement system. It has been identified by your good selves as a critical in improving efficiency, efficacy, and effectiveness of your office. So I think we need to know that to have some time frames on that. Otherwise, we'll be having an open-ended process. I also wanted to know whether is there any possibility that by the time these institutions apply for deviation, they've already deviated. That's why, for instance, when you say no, there's nothing that they can do. Have you found such instances? Rather than them asking permission from you, they are asking for condonation. While especially when it comes to the PPEs, one may understand the deviations by the Department of Health, Police, and other departments. I'm struggling to find a reason for ESCOM and BRASA. But since I think BRASA and ESCOM will be coming to us, I think let us not burden the OCPO. We need, when we send a letter of invitation to them, Darren, they must also address us on, amongst other things, the deviations, who's involved in these deviations, both from the ESCOM side and which companies have benefited from this deviation. Why are they deviating and expanding, and the amounts involved? And they must also tell us, did they get permission to do that? And will also have to give us the historical information about this behavior. And then we said we'll be writing a letter to the DG on top of the issues that have been raised by the by honorable members, including Honorable Ntlangwini and Honorable Kaiso. I think the DG must also address us on the permanent filling of the chief procurement officer. We said it has been in acting position for a long time. And again, the issue of capacity of this office has been raised. And again, the DG should tell us what are the plans of capacitating this this office. Honorable Peter, please come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I am going back to the question that I raised earlier about the capacity of the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer to deal with all the volumes of requests for all these extensions and deviations and modifications. And the question that you repeated now, I also raised on whether departments or the organs of state create the environment for these deviations. Chairperson, I would go further to raise a question. Is there some former Office of the Chief Procurement Office officials who are now procurement officers in some of the state organs who would truly know the inner workings of the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer in the way in which it would then result in the statement that has been made on the trends that indicate that there are those who, despite not having got the support from the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer for the deviation or an extension, they would go ahead? And I think you did ask that particular question also. And I want to say that it is also not acceptable for the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer here to say to us as the Appropriations Committee that accounting officers or accounting authorities should have done the work in terms of analyzing for requirements of or the qualifications for some of the companies. Because these accounting officers make requests to the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer for deviations and extensions. So I'm a bit concerned about the capacity of this office. And I would want to also know if there are companies who were blacklisted before, who still do business with government and organs of state. Because it would then mean that there are gaps
for these companies to continue coming through. And I would want to believe that even the emergency created by the pandemic created for an overview of these companies to really cry their luck in a different form. And that is why I'm interested in knowing who are the directors of these companies that got this procurement for COVID-19. And I heard earlier on an indication that there's a website, we could go there and look for details of the different companies. But it would also be important for this office to provide us as this committee the with information. Chairperson, I just want finally to ask, are we expected to say, yes, we agree to your deviations and extensions or modifications? Or what is it that we are expected to do, especially in view of the last statement of the last speaker before you came in, Chairperson, who said the accounting officers knows what needs to be done because they know the treasury regulations, they know the PFMA requirements. So I just want to know that is the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer expecting us to now say, yes, thank you, well done. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Estelle and your team, do you want to quickly respond to the issues that have been raised, some of your follow-ups and so on?
Thank you, Chair. With regard to your question on who approves, there is a unit within the OCPO, the Governance Monitoring and Compliance Unit, that has a couple of directors and deputy directors, and they process all these applications and draft responses, to which the chief director then looks at the reasons and either approves or supports the response, after which the CPO, in actual fact at the moment me, is approving these deviations and exemptions or exceptions or modifications. In cases where we find it necessary, we will engage with either our assets and liability management unit and our budget analysts to also understand the reasons that may be lying behind the reasons for deviation. But in actual fact, Chair, the answer is that it is still approved by the chair of the Chief Procurement Officer. Then with regards to the integrated procurement system, we are looking at, and this is the famous integrated financial management system, which has an SEM component to it. And the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer is involved with the IFMS project office to supply the system specifications. If that is still delayed, we will be delayed in having an integrated procurement system as well, unless we come up with a plan to deviate from that process, which we are also currently exploring at our office and seeing whether there are other possibilities for us. With regards to the permission and condemnation, in a lot of cases, Chair, these are requesting deviations prior to the implementation, which we would then either support or not support. But if it happens that they had deviated without the approval of Treasury, that then results in irregular expenditure for which they need to then apply for condemnation. And as I said, condemnation is quite an arduous process for departments and for accounting officers then to go through in order to apply for the condemnation. And it's also not just a yes or no process. We need to understand exactly what the circumstances were and if the if there was elements of criminality and if there was any losses to the state. Within the supply chain area in government, a lot of the government officials do move from one institution to another institution. And we do have officials that were former officials of the OCPO that are currently in CPO positions in other institutions, such as with Eskom and such with CETA. There are former CPO officials, and also with the Revenue Services, there are officials that were officials of the OCPO that are now with those institutions. And to answer Honorable Peter's question on blacklisted companies, we do have a published list of companies that are blacklisted on the National Treasury's website. And for government institutions then to enter into agreements with these companies would be against the rules of engagement, and that would definitely result in irregular expenditure. So it is also the responsibility of the people that does the evaluations to check on this list whether the directors or a specific company is blacklisted on this register for blacklisted companies. Chair, hopefully I have answered the questions. I will pause there.
Okay. Thank you, Estelle. Honorable Mdenzane, is there a particular I know you had a problem of connectivity. Is there a particular area that you want to repeat on?
No, Chair. Perhaps that question that you asked may be a subject of our own discussion as the standing committee, perhaps outside the chief procurement officer's, you know, fold. That's my view. That we need to relook into wherein, as Honorable Sangwin was saying, wherein we would ensure that the DG is part of such discussions. That's my view, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ndana. Sifiso, wanted to say something?
Yes, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chair. Just for the benefit of the committee, Chairperson, I just want to remind the committee of one thing that I said one day about the approval process, because the committee seems to be again concerned about the approval process of the deviation and expansion and the risk associated with it. In 2018, through SCOPA, there was a resolution that was made, communicated to National Treasury, to say National Treasury must form a committee that will approve this deviation and expansion to avoid the risk associated by giving someone this huge responsibility with a lot of money on it. It was 2018 already, before Soli left. Estelle, no. It's unfortunate that today this question comes up again to say who approved this deviation and expansion and the seniority thereof, when there was a communication from Parliament agreed by the Director General of National Treasury that it is too risky to subject an individual to approve this amount of money. And the recommendation was made that a committee must be formed. National Treasury agreed. It's unfortunate that we are still talking about this, Chairperson. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Mr. Makakula, still, do you want to respond to that? What have you guys done about that? I know that decision. That's why I was asking the question. If you want to delegate upward to the DG, it's fine.
Chair, there was discussions around having this committee. I think it fell by the wayside. I think more for the reasons that having a committee looking at these deviations might delay service delivery more. Not that that should be an excuse, but I will take it up with DG again, and we will look at this in forming a committee, and maybe the terms of reference around this approval committee then needs to be assessed, maybe in terms of thresholds or certain types of deviations and approvals. Due to the volumes that we are handling, we cannot practically look at every single one. So we would have to look at the terms of reference quite carefully when we set up a committee such as this.
Darren, I think that's another matter that we must add on the DG's letter, that will be appraised as to what exactly happened to that decision COPA.
Yes, Chairperson.
We need to add that on, because he must address this committee on those decisions, because that's what we're saying, that it would be very unfortunate if Parliament takes certain decisions and they're not implemented, because it's for the reason and it's even for the good for the same individual, for the individual who's occupying that position, so that it doesn't become her or his responsibility only. So yeah, that's I think that's how we'll close that one. Honourable members, I think that takes care of the issues around the Chief Procurement Office and its responsibilities, especially as they pertain to deviations and expansions, which was the subject of today's meeting. I know there are a lot of things which go beyond this, and honourable members started mentioning them, that one, it remains a concern of this committee that suppliers of goods and services are not being timeously paid, despite the fact that this parliament has appropriated money for those responsibilities. And we would like you to follow up on that. We know this was not the subject of today, but it's one of those things which is always there. The question of using the budget that we pass to transform and deal with the apartheid legacy, as far as exclusion of the majority of these people from the economic activity of this country, is very important. Would like your office to stay closer to that. It shouldn't be a by the way. It's very important for us. But Estelle and her team, thank you very much. You can remain in the meeting. We don't have any secrets here. But yeah, that takes care of your presentation. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you.
And honourable members, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Honourable members, can we go to agenda item number 5? It's a consideration of the minutes of the 27th of November 2020. It was public hearings on the 2020 Second Adjustment Appropriation Bill and the 2020 medium term budget statement. Because that was sent to us, honourable members. Do we have the mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Yes, Chair Mlenzana, I move.
Honourable Mlenzana is moving for the adoption of the minutes. Seconder.
Matafa, I second, Chair.
Matafa, it's seconding. So the minutes of 25 November 2020 are duly adopted. That takes care of agenda item number 5, honourable members. Can we go to agenda item number 6? Before I open up for Darren,
I don't know, honorable members, when are we going to deal with this thing? Because during the interaction, for instance, with different role players, especially departments and SOEs and the agencies, there are a lot of recommendations that we make and so on. But if one were to take the example that Mr. Makagula cited, that there was a decision taken but then not implemented. Today you raised a number of issues. What guarantee do we have? So what? What guarantee do we have that tomorrow we're not going to be sitting with the similar type of challenges? I think it's an area that we need to reflect on, because that will talk to our effectiveness and how effective we are as far as playing our oversight function. We, for instance, were calling the DG, but again, the ministers may have to come in and assist us on this on these things. So I'm just saying that it's something that if you could just park somewhere, because so that we satisfy ourselves that the things that we raise and decide on, they are not just a tick box type of an exercise. Any comment on this, on the statement I've just made, or members?
Can I come in, Chairperson?
Please, honorable member.
Chairperson, remember what I said after you would have raised this. That we would need a particular session to dig deeper into this. Chair, I think it is high time that for this particular standing committee to be recognized by our colleagues, particularly in government. I'm saying government deliberately, because I want to start it from the level of the minister down to DG and their functionaries. We may have to develop teeth to bite. And one such teeth would be either on a quarterly basis or on a 6-month basis, Darren assists us by developing a template of our resolutions, decisions, and also coupled with timeframes in terms of implementation. After which then, we shall have to make a government account. We are a committee here, Chairperson, with due constitutional and parliamentary rights to make government to account. This is a standing committee, Chairperson, not just a portfolio committee. It's a parliament, it's a committee of parliament. So then we've got a right to call whoever to come in and stand in front of this committee to account. The last chair would be a situation where we go to the leader of government business, the deputy president, and raise our dissatisfaction if the ministers do not come to the party. That is my view, Chair. Hence, I strongly feel that we need to be very smart, because when we're doing that, we don't have to be seen to be witch hunting, to be behind chasing the others against others. That's my view, Chairperson. I'm thinking aloud.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Mlenzana. That's very important.
Chairperson.
Honorable Peters.
Yes, Chairperson. In support to what Honorable Mlenzana has suggested, I would recommend that prior to engaging with the leader of government business, we take it through the parliamentary channels. And that would be the office of the of Mr. Frolic, what is it called?
Chair of Chairs.
Yes, that office, and to the speaker. Then the speaker would definitely write to the leader of government business, tabulating all the departments or the executing authorities that need to be brought to the attention of the DP with regard to issues emanating from this committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Peters. Honorable members, comment? if any?
Chair?
Honorable Ntlangwini.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think because we have several times even said we are sending letters and sending letters to those departments, to the head of the departments, the ministers and so forth. Maybe perhaps as well we need to, I think I want to support Honorable Peters in terms of the speaker, to involve also the speaker, because you know, it doesn't give a sense of joy whereby you hear on national television. Let me take, for instance, the thing of the State Capture Commission, where the chairperson of transport reported, you know, how the former chairperson of the committee reported how we conduct our work and so forth. So it doesn't give also a nice feel that we want to do our work to the best of our capacity, but yet there's no sort of way forward in solving some of the issues and the problems. If you look at this department that have come and unit that have come and report to us now, per se, that you can reflect back to all of the presentations that they have presented in front of us. It's the same things, lack of consequences, lack of project planning and so forth. And as they've been for the past 4 to 5 years, if not many or less. So we really need intervention as well. Maybe perhaps the speaker can really speak to the leader of government business to sort of let ministers take up some of these tasks and on their performances as well. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ntlangwini. Honorable Peters, do you want to a second bite?
I'm sorry to come back on this particular issue. It would also be very good for us as a committee to have side of the performance agreements that the ministers have signed with the president, just to look at whether there are financial or budgetary issues captured in the performance agreement, because it is always important for executing authorities to be able to know and understand what is happening with regards to the budgets in the department. So I it would be interesting to know whether financial issues are also at the core of the performance agreement.
Yes, thank you. Those performance agreements are of public. They're out there. We've got, and I'll request the researchers to just look at them. Oral Peter is saying, want to see whether they things which relate to the management of the budget and issues related to that. If you could just look at that as far as the performance agreement between the ministers and the president. Mute. Thank you. Got that at team research?
Yes, Chairperson, we'll definitely follow it up. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Any other oral member would like to have anything to say? Or we're all covered by the members who have just spoken. Thank you. That takes care. Darren, are there any other announcements you'd like to make?
No, Chairperson, no announcements.
Hi.
Sorry, Chair. I forgot this one. Sorry, Chair, about that issue we spoke about yesterday.
Yeah.
And you said I must raise it in the meeting. I don't know. I didn't want to raise it earlier on while we are having guests and so forth. But I think, Chair, maybe perhaps in fact, I also don't want to raise it on this platform. Maybe perhaps Darren must create for us a group of all of the committee members, since things are now virtually, out of members field to have an appropriations group, and we can even maybe perhaps raise issues there and meeting notifications and things like that, because like it, these things are being televised and I don't like to do those such of things on this platform. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntlangwini. I don't think there's in fact, I think it will also just help us to communicate about things which affect us. Darren, just a chat group of the members of the committee, so that we don't have some of the things, don't have to wait until we meet to raise issues in that platform. Honorable Ntlangwini, in that platform, do you want your support staff to also be part of it? I'm taking the matter that we...
100%, Chair. They need to be part, 100%.
Okay. Can you do that, Darren? Darren?
Hey, person. Yes, I can do it.
Okay, please do that, and then we'll just inform all the members that we have got that chat group. And the rules of the game is that we are dealing with things which pertain to our work, nothing else in that platform. So we shouldn't start going to that platform and fight there, no fighting. Okay. So it's more about enhancing our work and to allow members to raise issues which pertain to the committee. Am I correct?
Correct, Chair. So correct.
Thank you. Honorable members, I think, when is the next meeting, Darren? Darren, when is the next meeting?
Chairperson, it's next Thursday.
It's interesting.
Next Wednesday, it's budget speech, and then our next meeting is with the Minister of Finance after the budget speech.
Okay. Thank you so much, honorable members.
Chairperson, just clarity. Can I come in?
Please do.
How do we deal with the lockup situation?
Darren, come in.
Chairperson, I will just need to discuss that with our colleagues in Treasury, as they are responsible for the lockup. But I will communicate with the members before I send the notice for next week.
Plus, you know what happened if one would use the last MTF when we were read on virtual. People who are in parliament, they go to the room and they get locked up. But those who are on the virtual platform, they don't get to receive the documents for obvious reasons, that the information which is there is market sensitive, and you know these platforms are not as secure as you would like them to be. So last time we said those who were in parliament continued, and they were locked up in that room from 11 o'clock until the minister delivered his budget at 2 o'clock. But yes, Honorable Ntlangwini.
Sorry, Chair, to interrupt you. You remember last time on the last budget lockdown, and we raised also this concern when we were there, mm-hmm. that we actually were not appraised with a speech as in previous years on this budget lockdown. And that is the main reason why we are there, to let the committee peruse through the budget speech before presented in the House. Then the actual activity is now, it doesn't serve its purpose if we can't get the budget speech before it's actually read in the House sitting. Maybe perhaps, I don't know from your side, Chair, if you can maybe address that with the Minister and on another platform. Thank you very much.
I definitely remember that was an issue that was even raised with the minister, and I will remind him as early as today, so that They should know that we expect the speech as it is customary when we are locked up. Okay. Honorable members, thank you very much. This takes us to the end of today's meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
Long live the chair.
Long live.
Long live.
Long live. Long live.
Hey.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. See you in plenary in the afternoon.
Yes. Chairperson, you must go to church. It's Ash Wednesday today.
Yes. We'll be in plenary at the time.
You corner now at lunchtime, just opposite the... Oh, by the way, I thought... I'm looking at the picture behind you. I thought you were in Parliament. I'm sorry. Okay. But you are there in spirit.
Yeah, no, I'll be there in spirit.
Okay.
Thank you.